Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm Andrew Kern, and you are listening to Ask Andrew, a podcast of the Searcy Institute. In the last session, I gave a description of the pattern of the tabernacle as a pattern of revelation, and you can imagine the question that you probably had, because probably almost everybody had it, and that question is, can you give me an example? Now, I will say that in that session, I gave a sort of an example with the puppy, the idea of giving a puppy to a child, or at least the child's encounter with a puppy. And I also talked about how God himself is revealed in that pattern. But what I'd like to do in this session is to develop that notion of giving a child a puppy to illustrate this point, that the pattern of the pattern by which something reveals itself is the pattern of the tabernacle. Now, before I begin, there's two things I need to say. One is a prayer request with thanksgiving. And the thanksgiving is to our Lord and to you many donors who have helped keep the Searcy Institute afloat for many years, enabled Ask Andrew, and enabled Forma. But in this case, thanksgiving for the facility that we're in. And that leads me to the prayer request, which is this. We own approximately 1 acre, and I thank you for that. Around us are about 30 acres, most of which is beautiful wooded land, all of which is for sale. And we have dreams. I have wanted for years to build a retreat center. We'd like to have a college, to be honest. We'd like to have a village school, a local school, done in the image that we believe in. But with the land for sale, there's both an opportunity and, to be honest, is it a fear, a concern? I'm a little bit concerned that if the 30 acres sells, it might become a development of normal, everyday, disappointing. I don't want to get all negative here. It might become a development, and we would rather have it be a retreat center, college, and village school, and all the other things that we dream about. So please pray for us in that regard. It would mean a lot to us and to the future, I think, of classical education if we were able to get our hands on that land and do some really good things on it. Now, back to the question, though, because I said there were two things. The second thing that I need to mention first is basically a qualification. What I've said so far is that the temple or the tabernacle is a pattern of revelation. But what I'm not saying, what I have not said, is it's the pattern by which we typically study things. It is the pattern by which we are created to receive things. In other words, it's the natural way that when we encounter a new reality, it's how we encounter it. But unfortunately, for various reasons, which maybe I'll get into another time, the pattern itself can be obscured. We can be distracted from it. And so when I describe for you in the discussion that follows the pattern by which the typical child receives the typical puppy, it won't be hard for you to think of exceptions. And it also might not seem related to education, because in education, you're not giving little children puppies. Well, by analogy, you are. But let's set that aside for a moment. Well, no, let me pick it up for a second. The question is, when you give a child a puppy, are you giving them a living puppy or are you giving them a dead puppy? They don't like dead puppies as much as they like living puppies. In fact, there's a song from the 70s called Dead Puppies Aren't Much Fun. I recommend you listen to it. It was on Dr. Demento back in the day. Anyway, the pattern of revelation is not necessarily the pattern by which we put our effort into learning something. It's the pattern by which things naturally reveal themselves, or to use a modern kind of new agey term, it's how things manifest. I don't think they mean the same thing, though. So with that context, let's talk about this in relation specifically to giving a child a puppy. You can imagine a father deciding that his 8-year-old, 7-year-old child, son in this case, should get a puppy for Christmas. So he goes to the store and he buys a puppet. And the puppet looks a lot like a puppy. So he holds the puppet in his hand and he puts his other hand into the face of the puppet, so from inside, of course, and he kind of shakes it a little bit, and he walks over to his child and he says, "Son, I got you a dog." And he makes it look as real as possible, and he does the whining and noises and stuff, and then the child finds out that it's just a puppet. Now, that's not quite as bad as if your child asks for a loaf of bread and you give him a stone, or if your child asks for, I don't know, let's say a horse and you give him a serpent. But it's not all that different. In principle, by analogy at least, it's pretty much the same thing. It's a bad way to give a child a dog. What would be a good way to give a child a dog? Well, the way I envision it, you don't, because I don't like dogs. But the way I can imagine people who like dogs doing it, it would be something like this. You get a puppy. You get the finest puppy, the one that you know your child would love. Maybe the child has even seen it. And you buy that puppy, or you get it from the Humane Society for free. And then you bring it home, and it's Christmas Eve. The child, your son, goes off to bed. Upstairs, door is closed, and you bring that puppy inside and you put it inside a little cage with, that thin tissue paper. I think it's called tissue paper. You put that around it. It's yellow and red and green and whatever colors you use so that the child can't see it, can't be sure yet. But the child, of course, is suspicious. It is, after all, Christmas Eve. That night, everybody goes to sleep. You've done what you can to make sure the puppy lives until morning. And in the morning, the child, your child, descends the staircase with anticipation and hope, excitement and dread. Will it be like last Christmas? No, just kidding. And the child can smell something, because dogs, let's face it, they're repulsive smelling. The child can smell the dog. The child can hear something. The dog's probably even white, but he can't see it yet. And then he rips off the tissue paper and you open the door of the cage and the dog comes flying out, leaps on your son, licks his face to bits, soaks him like a sponge, I suppose. Well, that'd be the opposite, wouldn't it? Soaks him like something that makes something else really wet, like a fire hose, gets him covered in dog spittle, and you're grossed out, and your child is laughing and giggling and wrestling with this puppy and having such a good time. And then he starts playing with it over the course of the day, maybe over the course of the week. He pulls on the puppy's tail, and the puppy nips at him. Of course, you have to yell at the puppy to make him stop, and you probably should tell your son not to pull on the tail like that. And then maybe he steps on the puppy's paw, and the puppy whines a little bit. And gradually what happens is, without a textbook, without lessons, because the child loves the puppy, he learns, "Thou shalt not step on the puppy's paws. Thou shalt not pull the puppy's tails. Thou shalt not pick up the puppy and throw it off the roof. Thou shalt not yank on the puppy's ears," right? There are all these things that simply are principles of how to treat a puppy. Because if you do these things, you hurt the puppy. Two things happen then. One is your relationship with the puppy is harmed. And two, potentially even worse, the puppy is harmed. Over time, your son might try to feed the puppy chocolate and you stop. You step in. You say, "Don't do that." Because puppies, of course, aren't supposed to eat chocolate. Over time, the child might try to feed the puppy whatever he wants. And you have to teach the child, your child, that puppies need certain foods and can't eat other foods. Well, because your child loves your puppy, because your child cares whether that child is, that dog is healthy or not, he hears what you have to say. And he learns the principles of the puppy's blessedness. The principles follow the child's love for the puppy. That's the crucial point. The child becomes teachable about the principles of puppiness, not because you've put up a chart, not because you've scared the child to death, not because you're threatening him with a test, but because he loves the puppy. Well, over time, what happens is one day the puppy gets sick. Never before has your child thought about the innards of the puppy, let's say. Or maybe the maybe your puppy got attacked by a raccoon and won the battle, of course, because our puppies always win, but has wounds. Now, in a way he never did before, the child actually has to know the parts of the puppy. It's becoming a dog now, of course. But he actually has to know the parts. He has to know not only that this is a leg, but needs to know the details of the parts. Why? Because now he wants to heal the wound. And you see the sequence that's taken place. Do you remember in the last session I read the quotation from Aristotle? Let me read it again. What is to us plain and obvious at first is rather confused masses, the elements and principles of which become known to us later by analysis. Now that's typical Aristotle, very analytical, no emotion. What I'm trying to say is what he's describing in a hyper-rational analytical mode is how a child learns to love a dog. The first encounter with the dog is just confused masses, parts of the dog all thrown into one whole thing. But plain and obvious to the child, oh, it's a dog. What is to us plain and obvious at first is rather confused masses, but over time, the child comes to learn the elements and the principles. Why? By analysis. But why did the child engage in analysis? The child engaged in an analysis of the puppy without knowing he was doing so because he loved the puppy, because he had a relationship with the puppy, because he was participating in the life of the puppy. And so what happens is this. Stage one, let's call it for convenience to be Aristotelian. Stage one, the child encounters the mystery and wholeness of the puppy and does not presume or even want to steal that puppy's mystery from it. It just embraces and accepts the mystery of the puppy as the puppy. Because that mystery shone forth, it radiated out from its inner being into its activities, into its action, into its coat, into its eyes, into its relationship with the child. And what happened was the child fell in love. The child came to appreciate, to adore the puppy, played with the puppy. And then, because of that love, it learned some things bless the puppy, some things curse the puppy. I want to be united to my puppy. And I want my puppy to be well. In my union with the puppy, in my eagerness to be united to my puppy, I can hurt that thing. I can do harm. And when I do, it's not as good a version of itself as it could have been. So I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm going to withdraw from causing pain. I'm going to withdraw when I'm inclined to do things that will hurt my puppy. And instead, I'm going to find those things that bless it. And oh, look, it likes to play with me. I can love my puppy and it will love me back when I bless it instead of cursing it. And then in that love, having learned the principles of blessing the puppy, now from time to time, your child also learns the elements of the puppy meaningfully. Because, well, if I can use the analogy, I ended last session by saying, if the Lord is not on his throne, life in the camp is meaningless. Life in the camp is a place of the elements and the parts. If the child doesn't experience the mystery and glory of the puppy and participate in that glory, then all of the elements are meaningless. That's an example, a particular instance of how everything reveals itself to us in the form of the tabernacle. And what I'm suggesting to you is, therefore, that's how we should teach. I'm Andrew Kern, and you have been listening to Ask Andrew.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.